This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 JOY 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday the 13th of September. Welcome to The Informer. I'm Dean Arcuri.
And I'm Daniel Roberts. This week is Australia's first ever STI testing week, encouraging more Victorians to spring into action and get tested for sexually transmitted infections and bloodborne viruses.
This week is about focusing on educating, not only about STIs and bloodborne viruses, but also about the services that are available in your local communities.
When was your last STI check?
Oh, wow. It was Chill Out Festival last year, which is terrible.
My last STI check was last week, actually.
Mine was 4 years ago, but I've been in the same relationship for 5 years, so there's a clarifier there.
Oh, my last STI check was probably 6 months ago.
You just heard Dean asking some of the Joy team when their last STI checkup was, and the people asked were all men. The reality is that for men who have sex with men, the information and support is catered towards that community in a greater way when it comes to STI testing and information.
So for tonight's show, we're focusing on STI testing and information from the parts of the community who don't get the lion's share of that info and that support, as we look into women's, trans and regional STI testing and information around Australia.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
We start tonight's show at Equinox in Victoria. Established last year and based at the Victorian AIDS Council's Pronto Centre in Collingwood, Equinox is a peer-led trans and gender-diverse health centre who consult regularly with the VAC Trans Advisory Group and where patients can establish services needed, service needs and define priorities for them.
I spoke to the program manager of Equinox and Pronto, Peter Locke, about testing for the trans community. Peter, thank you for joining us tonight on The Informer. It is Victoria's STI testing week, and when we talk about testing in regards to sexually transmitted diseases, one of the areas that doesn't get focused on enough, and in fact has only really gotten a massive focus in the past year, has been the sexual health of trans people. Why do you think that's changed?
I think there's been an increase of awareness of trans people and their health needs being specific and different to the needs of the general population of or the LGBTI population overall. That trans people do have unique needs, and I think that's finally being recognised. I think it's a really it's a great thing, and we all need to kind of work together to kind of increase the testing of that of this population.
Absolutely.
Which are traditionally under-tested.
One of the reasons possibly why is because from a medical side, when not with places like Equinox, where you're a part of, or Pronto, when you're within the health spectre of LGBTIQ, there's greater understanding of what the variety of needs are for trans people and the many different levels that comes with it. There's greater communication and there's just greater awareness in regards to the needs of trans people. It still needs to improve, but there is greater awareness. But when you step out of that into the rest of the space of medicine, information is a lot harder and communication is a lot harder. How can we improve upon that?
You're absolutely right. It's very difficult. I think, in fairness, what I've found over the last 18 months since Equinox has been open is that we have a lot of health professionals wanting to improve, which is great news.
That's wonderful.
So a lot of them are well-intentioned, but don't have the information. As such, we at Equinox, we've put together some work instructions that are available on the Equinox website for other health services who are doing STI testing, which gives them some insight and some ideas on how to approach trans people in this situation. So what kind of language they should use, things, the preconceptions that they may have that they need to let go of, some different ways of viewing other people's sexual experiences and gender experiences, which are different to our own.
Mm-hmm.
So that's hopefully, that's available out there for any clinician and any service to use. It is specific to sexual health testing, but it kind of applies across medicine overall. So that's one thing we've done to address this need. There's also other work being done, great work being done by PASHTM, who are a group of transmasculine guys that have put together an amazing resource called Grunt on sexual health for trans men. So bit by bit, the information is getting out there, and other services are hopefully going to continue picking it up, taking it on board, and improving what they do. Because as the services get better, we'll hopefully find our trans population will keep returning back for testing. Another thing that we are trialling over at Pronto at the moment is having an STI testing service for trans people run by a peer tester who is trans identified. We find that, well, we don't know, but we suspect that maybe some trans people weren't coming into Pronto because they thought it was a gay men's or an MSN service, and they may not have identified in that way. And so therefore thought that they couldn't really access the service. So we're having a Friday morning session every fortnight, which is just for trans people, trans masculine, trans feminine, non-binary, where they can come in and do a comprehensive STI screen, or they can just come in and chat to a peer about their sexual health questions. So that's another strategy that we're working on, seeing whether that's going to work.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, I think that's a really important thing in regard to this. One of the brilliant things about PASHTM is that that was actually created by trans men wanting to make sure this information was not only being heard, but being communicated properly. And it's great that we're getting this information out there, but we do need to remember that we don't need to just offer services to trans people, but we need to have them be just as much a part of every aspect of what we're doing as well.
Absolutely. We've got to engage with the trans community. We don't want to do things about them without them. It's really important for Equinox and Pronto, and I'll say back overall, to that we are engaging with the trans community. If we want to work with this space, we have to listen and we have to include everybody that we want to work with.
We now do have a lot more understanding, thanks to PASHTM in the past year, about the needs of trans men in regard to this space. But what can we do for the needs of trans women?
Well, that's a really good question, because I think we need to make trans women make sure that they're welcome, that they're included. We have to be really careful that we don't lump trans women in as MSM, which traditionally happens in a lot of sexual health services.
True. I mean, that's so important on all sides of the trans spectrum.
Absolutely. Yeah. And on the reverse side of that, we want to make sure that trans men who are having sex with men are considered MSM.
Yeah.
And again, this is something that services overall need to be aware of, those little differences, and aware of the impact that kind of language has. And we need to make sure that we are considered in the language we use and the way we ask things on intake forms. And we can't just kind of say, yeah, you're welcome here. We have to prove it. We have to make sure that the service they experience is meaningful to them, and the information that we're giving is answering their questions and their needs. And but they may have concerns about the interactions of hormones and tests. which, by the way, hormones don't impact an STI test in any way in terms of the results. But these are things that need to be addressed, which we don't normally think about when we're just testing non-trans or gender diverse people.
So it's really important for us to open up that awareness and communication.
Definitely, yeah. And consider things that we don't normally consider in our daily work working with cis communities.
Well, we're going to have all that information that you've talked about up on our social media, as well as in the links to tonight's podcast. We thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Anytime.
That was Peter Locke, Program Manager of Equinox and Pronto.
And if you're a trans or gender diverse non-binary individual who would like to use Equinox's STI testing service for trans people, run by a peer tester, which Peter talked about, one is happening this Friday morning, and you can sign up for that by contacting equinox.org.au.
The link to their site will be up on our social media and in our podcast information after tonight's show.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
When it comes to sexual health information, women can find it a lot harder to access support and can feel stigmatised when reaching out, whether from the community or unfamiliar medical practitioners.
Today, we spoke to Kathleen McNamee from Family Planning Victoria about the barriers women can face and what we are doing to bridge this divide to provide greater support and information for all.
It's spring into action and it's STI testing week here in Victoria. As men who have sex with men, we're constantly surrounded by information reminding us to get tested, to know your status, to be aware. It's something for the gay community that's really strong and really apparent. For women, it's another side of the spectrum.
Yes, it is. That there's not the same sort of bombardment, or there's not the same consciousness of it at all.
Do you think that comes from a space of fear in relation to women being aware of information, or young women being aware of information because of pregnancy, or just because the energy hasn't been focused that way?
Look, I think it's probably more an energy thing, and you know, it's in relation to risk, because the risks are a lot higher in men who have sex with men. You know, particularly now that we've got PrEP, we think that the risks might even be a little bit higher. So I think that actually has a lot to do with it.
Kathleen, would you say that there is a sense of stigma amongst any kind of female community around getting tested?
I wouldn't say, probably around the testing, it's generally not too bad, but actually being diagnosed with it, well, I suppose I'm sort of contradicting myself. I suppose being diagnosed with a sexually transmitted infection, there is quite a lot of stigma with that still, and I suppose that probably does relate back to people's fear of getting tested.
How do you think we can improve communication so that we can make it more safe and make more understanding for women to be able to be aware of STIs and be aware of the sexual knowledge that they need and that testing is okay?
Yeah, I think it probably, we need to really make it a sort of like a routine part of people's healthcare in some ways, that it's, there's no sort of thought about, you've had this many partners, you need testing. It's basically everyone who has sex needs testing. Like the recommendation for women under 30 is that if they've had sex of any sort, that they should have a yearly chlamydia screen. Because as you're probably aware, most of the chlamydia we diagnose is in people without symptoms. It's much less common for someone to come in and have symptoms and have a test and get a positive result.
Kathleen, as men who have sex with men, we are aware of the men-only clinics that we can attend. What sort of resources are out there for women that might only feel comfortable, you know, being around women or getting tested by women?
Yeah, there's probably really no exclusive women-only clinics that I'm aware of. Family Planning Victoria's got two clinics, one at Box Hill and one in the city that's about to reopen. It's being refurbished at the moment. And at the moment, we actually are all women, but sometimes we're not. But, you know, we have male patients as well, so that they, if they're wanting a sort of an all-female environment, unfortunately there's really nowhere that I know of.
Do we think that kind of support would help create a better environment for women to be able to feel that they can go and see another female practitioner so that they have better understanding and information for what they need?
Look, I think a lot of women do actually express that they would prefer a female practitioner, and, you know, certainly for our clinic, I've forgotten, we do have one male at the moment, that's dreadful, and he's a wonderful doctor too. You know, certainly we inform women when they come in whether it's okay for them to see a male doctor, because we know it can be an issue. They might assume that they're coming into an all-female clinic, because usually we are all female.
Kathleen, seeing as it is STI testing week, what sort of STIs are women more prone to among the community?
Well, the really big one is chlamydia. You know, we think for young women the carriage rate's somewhere between about 3 and 5%, and most of those aren't actually aware that they have it. The other, like gonorrhea, is much less common in women, but it is increasing. You know, when I first started working in the area, it was 6 years before I saw a gonorrhea in a female, and now it's a fairly routine thing that we see. Syphilis is uncommon. I suppose herpes would be the one that we see a bit of, but there's no screening for herpes, so really we just encourage people to come in if they've got symptoms, like which would be sort of generally sores on their genitals or a painful sort of area, pain passing urine.
Do you know of anything, I mean, when we're talking about STIs for women, a lot of the time we are, we channel towards straight women in regards to the conversation.
Yes.
Are there things that we need to think of or should be talking about in relation to women who have sex with women?
I'd say that it's no different, really, or you know, women who identify as bisexual in terms of what their risks are. I suppose it just depends on their risks and what the risks of their partners are. But generally the big focus for women is the chlamydia testing.
Being a man, I wasn't quite sure how to approach this because I could look at a lot of data and I could ask you a lot of questions and it would all be fine. So I actually asked my sister.
Yes.
What kind of information is missing? What kind of information should be there?
Yes.
And what she started talking about was, oh, well, what we hear about a lot is protection used to stop pregnancy and also once you start having pelvic testing, where that's where you get all of your information.
Yeah.
We should be encouraging that in a different way, though, shouldn't we?
In terms of, I suppose the thing is for most of the testing, you don't even need an examination because most of the time we would actually get the woman to do it with a self-taken vaginal swab, like just a cotton bud that they put into their vagina and just, you know, rub it around a couple of times or a urine test. However, you know, if they're having a pap test, that's often a time that the doctor or nurse will talk to them about sexually transmitted infections and you know, take the opportunity to offer some testing. I suppose what we'd be really saying is that people coming in for anything, that's an opportunity to offer them testing. But there was a study actually done on young women and what they felt about being offered testing. And what they were sort of clearly saying is they wanted it to be that they felt that everyone was being offered testing, not just them. You know, that the doctor had sort of picked them out as being the risky one.
Yeah.
And that the tests were easy and that the treatment was easy. Most of them felt that if they were asked a lot of questions about their sexual history, that they weren't likely to, you know, be completely truthful about it, which I think most of us are guilty of at some time or other when we go and see a health practitioner. So I suppose that the focus for us would really be just, you know, it doesn't have to specifically be a sexual health issue, just is just a normal part of healthcare that you would be approached about any time you'd see a health practitioner.
Kathleen, I guess with any demographic you can choose to be educated, is there a certain demographic amongst women that you see get tested more often, or is it younger people, is it middle-aged women, or is it just more up to the individual at the moment?
Yeah, look, it's generally younger women that we see who'll be specifically coming in and saying that they'd like a screen. You know, we see that sort of quite a bit. For older women, I mean, we're generally, you know, older than 30, we generally say that screening's not recommended unless there's a particular risk that they've got, like they're a sex worker or their partner's had a sexually transmitted infection. Of course, if they're worried, they can have screening done, but, you know, generally we wouldn't be sort of recommending it to them. But, yeah, I think I'm seeing this really encouraging thing where young people, all they've come in for is to have a screen, which years ago I don't think we saw very much.
So the information's there and the knowledge is being shared. That's the most important thing.
I hope so, yeah. Look, probably not as well as it could be. You know, that there is more that we can do to sort of get the message out. Like at the moment we're going down to our local, some of our nurses are going down to our local TAFE and sort of handing out cards so that people can come in and have a free STI test at family planning. We're in Box Hill at the moment only during STI week. So, you know, we're hoping that that sort of might raise some more local awareness.
Well, that's the most important thing, just reaching out, letting them know that you're there and letting people remember that they can be as informed as they want and they should be aware of what they're doing at all times and that the testing is available there for them.
Yes, and it's just straightforward testing. You know, it's generally not invasive. If they've got symptoms, we'd normally need to do an examination. But, you know, normally it's we often don't even have to touch the person, you know, if they don't want that done.
Fantastic. Kathleen, thank you so much for joining
us. No worries. Thank you very much.
We really appreciate it.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer. The news.
The Broken Hill Festival was on this past weekend in Broken Hill in outback New South Wales. ACOM were there, offering rapid HIV tests, STI screenings, as well as sharing information about services, programs, risk factors and protection with anyone who wanted it.
Dean spoke to Teddy Cook, the Regional Outreach Development Manager of ACON, about what it was like in Broken Hill and opened our eyes to what it is really like across regional Australia.
So, Teddy, thank you for joining us on The Informer. You guys went to Broken Hill again. You've done this before. You went to Broken Hill to basically reach out regionally in regards to STI information and testing. What was it like this weekend?
You know what? I have to say it was magical. We've been a community partner with the Broken Hill Festival now for 3 years, and it never, ever, ever disappoints. This year we engaged in rapid HIV testing for festival goers.
Wow.
And as well as did some sample collection for STI screening and did a whole bunch of health promotion and really tried to connect with local community members. The festival was the biggest year ever, and we tested more people than we had ever before, which is super cool.
That's fantastic. Going to regional festivals, normally they're at very specific queer festivals, so you might be engaging with the same type of people or people trying to access information. But what's very different about Broken Hill is the larger portion of that community is actually from that outback area of Australia. It's not necessarily the LGBTI community that we associate with. So was there a lot of engagement in that regard?
Yeah, there was, big time. I mean, there are people attending Broken Hill Festival from all over Australia, and there's certainly a lot of people attending who are local to Broken Hill as well. And but I'd say that the more people that go are from the queer communities. But, you know, generally the outback and Broken Hill will, I guess, forever be associated with Priscilla.
Well, you guys had quite a big showing there as well. In my mind, I assumed it was going to be you, a couple of other people and a caravan there doing STI testing and having conversations with people. But then when you look online, you had quite a big team there with you.
Yeah, so we partnered and have since the beginning of our work with the festival with Far West Local Health District, Western New South Wales Local Health District, the State Reference Lab for HIV and ACON, it's sort of and also Murrumbah, the local Aboriginal Health Service, who really generously lend us their clinical outreach bus. So it really is a partnership, and you know, testing in community settings in that sort of space, the way that where the community's at and how the community is, and just sort of embedding our service into the festival, you know, proved to be really successful.
Yeah. I think that's one of the challenges that we assume we face when it comes to regional spaces, is trying to have these conversations and trying to reach out to the community and talk about sexual health in this way. I guess that's why that's one of the good things with what you guys were doing and having such a presence there.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think that we should always challenge assumptions about how ready regional communities are to talk about sexual health and how ready regional communities are to talk about the LGBTIQ experience. I have been engaging in regional outreach now across southern New South Wales, far west New South Wales, for like 3 or so years now, and I'm yet to meet someone who is vehemently opposed to the community, to our work. I meet some of the most progressive people I have ever met. We should always challenge these assumptions that people living in the bush are backward, because that is absolutely not the case.
Was having the rapid HIV testing at the Broken Heel Festival a massive bonus as opposed to just informing?
Yeah, look, I think being able to have testing available on site is really powerful. And we've done that since day one. We've done it for 3 years now. The first year we tested 20 people, and over the weekend we did 44, I think.
I guess that's the main thing at the end of the day. We need to make sure that we are comfortable getting tested, talking about being tested and understanding what STIs are and what it all means when we're engaging and so that we know more about our sexual health.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's good to remember that most STIs don't have any symptoms at all. And, you know, I prefer to call them sex souvenirs and really try actively to destigmatise our sexual health experiences.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
So, Dan, here's a question.
Give it to me.
When was your last STI checkup?
So, actually, coincidentally, very recently. And I had, when you brought the idea for the show to me today, it made me realise, like, wow, I'm glad I got tested and it's amazing that it's happened right now. Because I'd managed to just sort of put it off on the back burner and managed to forget about it. Having moved house from Sydney to Melbourne, it's amazing how life gets in the way of health sometimes and you do just need to go and get checked.
It's true. It really is true. I'm of the same regard, actually. It wasn't until recently that a circumstance forced my hand. And then recently I had relations with a trans friend of mine and it was lovely, but there was a little blood afterwards. And we went, oh, what does that mean? We talked about whether we were on PrEP or what was going on with each of our sexual health. And then I thought, all right, I better go and get tested. So I did. And then I realized when I did that, that there wasn't really a lot of information that was set up for a man having sex with a trans person in regard to what that meant for the medical practitioners. That's why it's so great that Equinox exists and that PASH-TM have created the resource that they have, because the information's not there, not just for us as members of the community, but also for practitioners to be able to learn and understand. So I've actually just finished today a course of PEP, which I was on, because they didn't know whether I should be on it or not. And in the boxes they needed to tick, they didn't know where to go. And all I did was went, got tested. I was in and out in 15 minutes. They gave me the prescription. I've taken it. There you are.
Yeah, look, I mean, going on PEP is super easy. And it might not be easy to go through that moment to walk yourself into the clinic and to get tested. But once you're there and you meet the doctors, they make it super easy and it's super accessible.
It was really, really simple. And it was a simple matter of just going there and going, hey, so this is what happened. And they turned around and went, oh, well, we're not sure whether this fits in this column or this. So this is what we're going to do. And I've been taking it every day for the course of it. Now, I still have to get another HIV test to see where everything's at, and then another one 6 weeks later. But that's par for the course. And then it's time for me to get back into regular testing every 3 months.
Well, that's it for another episode of The Informer. We'll be back tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. to bring you the day's big news from an LGBTI perspective.
A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au/podcast or your preferred podcast platform.
We'd like to thank all of tonight's guests, Kathleen McNamee, Peter Locke and Teddy Cook, for speaking with us, as well as our team for putting together tonight's show.
My name's Dean Arcuri.
And I'm Daniel Roberts, and you've been listening to The Informer.
Coming up next is the news, followed by Unicorn Youth.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.